to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the last verse, chapter 4, verse 22, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. A stranger comes into town, meets a young woman, falls in love, they get married. They enjoy a happy marriage until the husband dies and leaves a young widow with no means of support. She seeks a new life in a new town where she becomes the newly come stranger. And there she meets an older man who at first seems an unlikely match, but they fall in love. They seem destined to walk that familiar path to marriage, but wait, there is a rival who threatens their storybook ending. He is finally overcome in the end, and the happy couple get married and have a son and live happily ever after. So is that the plot of a recent bestseller or a perennial bestseller or the plot of a blockbuster coming to a theater near you? No. If you are familiar with the Bible, which I assume probably most of you are, you know that this is the story of Ruth from the Old Testament. And so we are beginning a study of this brief historical book. So why study the book of Ruth? Well, first of all, it is a story of universal human experience, which speaks to the most fundamental of human needs. It's a story that just involves a very common place and common people and a very common time with a lot of common problems. Who cannot relate to the situations in the book of Ruth? The death of a spouse, the death of a parent, the death of a child. The idealistic hopes of youth being unrealized and lost as time and death seems to remove all opportunities in life. You know, the entire human race has to deal with life not going the way that they would perhaps most like it to go. And we all want that happy ending. Well, the book of Ruth teaches us how to have the only truly happy ending, and that is through the promised Redeemer, Jesus Christ. So we want to introduce the book of Ruth. We want to consider something about its message and see where those handles are for us to get a hold of as we go through this book. We first want to start with the author and the date and the place of the writing. Now, the human author of the book of Ruth is unknown. There are some traditional sources that would say that it was written by the prophet Samuel. There's really very little evidence to establish that. The internal evidence within the book itself, relevant for dating the book, which we'll talk about in a moment, is really strongly against Samuel. Other than Samuel, I haven't seen many proposed authors named. The book does not identify the author. History has not preserved that information. And as it is, of course, with all of the biblical books, ultimately we know that the author is the Holy Spirit, as Peter writes in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 21. Now, the date of the writing of this book is also unknown. There are some that would place it during David's lifetime, written by Samuel, as they suppose, or perhaps the prophet Nathan. Now, the strongest argument for this being written during David's lifetime or very shortly thereafter would be the genealogy at the end of the book. It stops at David. It doesn't proceed any further. Some do place it during Solomon's time being written, maybe prompted as a tribute to his father and the beloved king of Israel. Now, the only internal evidence that we have within the book itself in order to try to establish when that it was written has to do with the writing, the style, the vocabulary, all of those sort of things. Now, there are some Hebrew scholars that believe the book is stylistically much later than the time of David or Solomon. So they would base this on the use of certain phrases, certain turns of phrase in the language that's used, the explanation of customs. In fact, in chapter 4 and verse number 7, you have a verse there that explains the custom of taking off of the shoe in order to guarantee the contract or what have you. And it's explained that this was something that was done in old time in Israel, as if those at the current time of writing, that was a custom that had perhaps, you know, fallen out of practice. So what that would mean then would be that the book was likely written at a much later date, but that it was written in an earlier style. So think about perhaps when you read a novel or maybe even see a movie or something that is set in a distant time in history. But usually, even though they may have all the right costumes and all of those sort of things, a lot of times it's told with a little bit more modern flair. So they say things, they use sarcastic humor, you know, that would be much more prevalent today than it was during the time of the Civil War or something like that. Well, it's that sort of thing. So it seems like the book was written much later, but was purposely written in an earlier style, trying to come much closer to when the actual events happened. So that would put the date perhaps after the exile and return to Jerusalem. And that would make the book of Ruth among some of the last books of the Old Testament that were actually written. Of course, again, this leaves us with the date of the writing that is uncertain. We just cannot be sure about that. But what is the place of the book of Ruth in the Old Testament? Well, our English Bibles follow the Septuagint, which was the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. And the Septuagint presented the books, all the same material, but just presented the books in a different order. And Ruth, in our Bibles, comes after Judges and before 1 Samuel. Now, this placement corresponds with the time in the events of the book itself. So that would be a chronological placement of the book of Ruth. If we're just considering when these events happened, then Ruth is exactly where that it ought to be. Now, the Hebrew Old Testament placed it in the collection of the scrolls known as the Writings. And the Hebrew Old Testament was in three different collections of scrolls. And the Writings was the scrolls that corresponds roughly to what we think of as wisdom and poetry books. And it was what was at the end of the Old Testament. So the writings included Psalms, Job, Proverbs, Ruth, Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes, Lamentations, Esther, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah in one scroll, and Chronicles in one scroll that we have as 1st and 2nd Chronicles in our Bibles. So obviously you see there that Ruth was placed after Proverbs and before Song of Solomon in the Hebrew Old Testament. Now, this placement of Ruth is obviously not chronological, but it is what we would call a thematic placement. And there is a continuity of theme when you think about it, because Ruth then follows what ends the book of Proverbs, which is Proverbs 31, the discussion of the virtuous woman. And within the book of Ruth, she's referred to as a virtuous woman. And in fact, in all of the Old Testament, she's the only virtuous woman that we have the story of her life told to us. So it does seem to follow that. And then before the Song of Solomon, well, the Song of Solomon speaks of idealized love and marriage. So obviously you have at the end of the book of Ruth, the marriage of Boaz and Ruth, and they're having a son and continuing on. So that is more of a thematic placement of the book of Ruth rather than chronological. So how do we classify the book of Ruth? How do we know what it is that we're dealing with when we look at this book? And that's obviously going to guide us in interpreting it. We need to identify what kind of book it is, and then that helps us to understand it. So among biblical books, Ruth would be classified as what's called historical narrative. So biblical historical narrative gives an account of real events and real people in a real place at a real time in history. All right. So this is not just some sort of, for instance, a parable that's just sort of a morality tale that isn't necessarily about anyone real, but is just a tale. It takes place in real time with real people. Now, biblical narrative does not give us just a recitation of historical facts. But rather what biblical narrative does is that it uses people and events to teach us truth and wisdom. So it's not giving us direct dialogical type of teaching, but rather it's telling us about something that happened and how people responded to that and presenting an evaluation to us in order to teach us truth and wisdom, what we might call theological meaning. So, example of that. In verse 1 that we started with, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land." And then verse 22 of chapter 4 that ends the book tells us, "And Obed beget Jesse, and Jesse beget David." So in other words, we have a clue at the start and at the end of this book that it's about more than just finding a husband for Ruth. Finding a husband for Ruth constitutes really what you might say is the central plot of the story as it unfolds. But it's about something more. The time of the judges is where it begins and it ends with David. Now, obviously, from other books and study of the Old Testament, we know the significance of David. And so that immediately lets us know that there's something more and there's something important about this account as to why it's included in the Bible. Now, if we look at the story of Ruth, and it is a story, it's a true story. It just means that it's a story, just means that it's given to us in that form. It's given to us in the form as the events unfolded and things happen. So then looking at a story, we can classify it further in literary terms. And we would say that externally, the book of Ruth is a love story and it is a hero's journey. The stakes in such a story are life and death. And what we find in the book of Ruth is that it begins with death and it ends with life. Sometimes that would be referred to as a resurrection theme. This theme and the accompanying theme of famine to fullness is seen with each of the main characters in this book. Internally, the book of Ruth is a morality and a redemption story. The stakes in such a story are that of selfishness to self-sacrifice. Ruth also has themes of love and loyalty, self-sacrifice with each of the main characters. Now, the plot structure of Ruth is what is known classically as comedy. That doesn't mean that it contains jokes, but it refers to the shape of the plot moving upward throughout the story to a happy ending. That is in contrast with the classical definition of a tragedy. A tragedy is the opposite. It has a structure of the plot that moves downward through the story and ends with catastrophe. All right. So those are just two classic definitions of stories from history. Well, Ruth follows that comedy plot. It moves upward to a happy ending. What are the crucial elements of the book of Ruth? Well, the first of those would be the setting where this account takes place. Chapter 1 and verse 1 tells us, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons." So it tells us about the time when this took place. The time was when the judges ruled in Israel, before there was a king, before there was a monarchy. Now, this refers to about a 350-year time span in Israel's history. After that, they had entered the promised land through the leadership of Joshua until the time that Saul was made a king in Israel. Now, Israel during this time, which we get a lot of information from the book of Judges, during this time, Israel was characterized by covenant disobedience, cycles of war and captivity with the nations around them, individual lawlessness where, as the book says a few different times, every man did what was right in his own eyes. Probably one of the most well-known quotes from the book of Judges. The book of Judges also identifies the problem with Israel was that they had no king. They had no king to deliver them from their enemies. They had no king to deliver them from their own sins. They had no king to cause them to keep God's covenant. And we have that verdict that is given four different times in the book of Judges. They had no king. Now, the action takes place between two different locations. Bethlehem, which was a tribal possession of Judah in Israel, and in Moab. Moab were the perennial enemies of Israel, located on the southeastern side of the Dead Sea. In fact, on the other side of the Dead Sea, the eastern side of the Dead Sea, the Judah possession was on the western side of the Dead Sea. Now, Ruth is like the book of Esther in that there are no supernatural miracles in the book of Ruth. There are no overt divine interventions. No angels come down from heaven. No fiery chariots. Nothing. No splitting of the Red Sea. Nothing like that takes place in the book of Ruth or in the book of Esther either. So it portrays for us a reality that is normal life. And there are providential events with an inferred divine activity. In other words, this is what we might refer to as the unseen hand. God's hand is all throughout the book of Ruth, like it is with Esther, but it's just not drawn that overt attention to. Now, Ruth is unlike Esther in the fact that there are somewhere around 20 references to God in the book of Ruth, where there are none in the book of Esther. In fact, Naomi attributes the ending of the famine in the land of Judah. She attributes that to God in chapter 1 and verse number 6. Boaz makes note that Ruth is under God's protection in chapter 2 and verse 12. And it is noted that it was God who gave conception to Ruth that she bare a son in chapter 4 and verse 13. And then we have the women of Bethlehem who bless Naomi, and they bless God's goodness in giving her a kinsman in her grandson in chapter 4 and verse 14. The point of view in this book is told from what's referred to as the third person omniscient narrator. The narrator knows more than the characters in the story as these things are happening and gives accurate descriptions and assessments of these events. So what that means is, at different points along the way, the reader is listening to the narrator tell the story and is given knowledge that the characters didn't have or realize at that time. That's just a term in literature referred to as dramatic irony, when the reader knows more than what the character does at that time. Just it creates suspense and, you know, wanting to know what find out and what happens. Now, a story is a story because something happens. Well, if nothing happens, there's no story. You know, Jim sat down on the porch. Well, that's not a story. It might happen regularly, but it's not a story. Nothing happens. Nothing takes place. There's no conflict. There's no solutions. There's no resolution. But the events in a story, the things that happen, the action that takes place, it's what calls for responses and choices that the people in the story have to make. Now, the characters in a story are driven by what they desire, what it is that they're trying to achieve, or what it is that they're trying to obtain. So the external desire in the book of Ruth is for rest. They are looking for rest for their temporal, earthly lives. But as is often the case in a very well-crafted story, that's only an external want, an external desire. And we find out in the story that there's actually a much more important internal desire, a greater desire, and really what you would call a need. This is what they want. They want temporal rest. But what they need is the greater rest that is provided by the promised Davidic king in his kingdom. The unifying theme of Ruth, or what you might say the message of the book. What is the most prominent message of the book of Ruth that we are being taught? It is this: finding rest comes only through God's gracious provision of the kinsman redeemer who purchased peace, security, abundance, and everlasting life in his kingdom for Jews and Gentiles alike through faith. I believe that is the controlling theme and message of the book of Ruth. The English word rest only occurs three times in the text of Ruth, but it occurs in very strategic places. And the word where it does occur is, it actually translates three different Hebrew words, but the concept of what is conveyed by this word, or the ideal, it is what permeates this book. So what is the rest that is being spoken of in the book of Ruth? Well, if you look at the word in chapter 1 and verse 9, that is when Naomi is speaking to her daughters-in-law, and she says in verse 9, "The Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." And in chapter 3, and verse number 1, when Naomi is later speaking to Ruth in Bethlehem, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" So the rest that she is speaking of in those two places speaks of rest found in the home of a husband. What it ultimately speaks to, though, is having a home, having love, having peace, having security, having abundance of provision, and having ongoing life through children and grandchildren and so on. This is ultimately the ideal of rest that is the controlling theme of the book of Ruth. And this unifying theme works on different levels in the story, with a temporal rest and a greater rest that would point to an everlasting rest in Jesus, the greater David. So who are the characters in the book of Ruth? The main characters of the book of Ruth are Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. Each of these characters are indispensable to the book, and each of these also interact with the unifying theme of rest and other themes in the book, like life and death and famine to fullness and love and loyalty and self-sacrifice. Think about Ruth, first of all. Ruth begins as a Moabitess woman. She has a life and rest with her husband until he dies. She shows love and loyalty to Naomi, her mother-in-law, and Naomi's God. She sacrifices to become a part of a new people and to care for her aging mother-in-law. And she ultimately is redeemed by Boaz and finds rest in his home and is given a son and therefore new life. Next we have Boaz. Boaz begins in his part of this story. He begins with rest. He's known as a mighty man of wealth, is how he is described. He has servants upon servants and fields, and he's taking in a great harvest when they come back to Bethlehem. But his rest is unsettled. And here we have a little bit different use of that same word, but in chapter 3 and verse 18, when Naomi tells Ruth to just wait patiently because that man will not rest until he has seen this through this day. His rest is unsettled when he meets Ruth, and she's willing to marry him. He acts out of compassion and love and within loyalty to God's covenant to redeem the heritage of Elimelech, his kinsman, by purchasing his property and marrying the wife of the dead, who is Ruth. Boaz is then given a son, continues the line of Judah, and his great-grandson David, and he comes to rest. And then we have Naomi. Naomi begins with rest that is unsettled by a famine that takes place in the land of Judah. And she finds a new home in Moab with her husband and her sons. But her rest is ended with the death of her husband and then the death of both of her sons. She's left without support. She returns to Israel to live off the charity of her people. Ruth accompanies her, of course, and she recognizes the kinsman's interest in Ruth. And she guides Ruth through the process of seeking redemption. Boaz and Ruth are married and are given a son. And Naomi's grandson then is recognized as God's gift and the restoration of life to Naomi. And she finds rest when she didn't expect it nor think that it was possible for her anymore. Now, when we think about the book of Ruth and each of these characters sort of has their own story that is intertwined in this book. Naomi's story is the one that parallels most closely the story of the nation of Israel. She is scattered from off the promised land due to covenant unfaithfulness, the mention of famine, which is one of the promised curses for breaking God's covenant. She sojourns in the land of her enemies, where she becomes a widow, bereft of children, and impoverished. Now, this is the exact image that is used of Israel and Judah in their exile, especially by the prophet Isaiah in some different places. He predicts that future look of Israel and Judah as being that impoverished widow bereft of children who is wandering, scattered in the earth. Naomi has experienced death in the sense that now, as it comes out in the account, she's too old and she's too poor to have a husband or to have a family. She can't start over a new family. She can't have any more children. That ship has sailed for her. She cries out to God. In some cases, we look in like chapter 1 in a couple of places, like verse 13 and verses 20 and 21. And she's airing some complaints against God. But she's also crying out her complaints to God, which reminds us of the widow that Jesus spoke about in Luke chapter 18, verses 1 to 6, who kept bringing her complaints to that unjust judge. And boy, that parable ends in such a strange way that God will avenge his elect who cry unto him day and night. And he talks about finding faith when he returns. In other words, obviously that parable has application to the nation of Israel. Ultimately, God hears her prayers and turns to gather her and to restore her in the land promised to Abraham through the birth of a son and ultimately the Davidic Messiah. It's no wonder that the Hebrew Old Testament placed this book where it did, if indeed it was written at that late date, as seeing this book as a great encouragement to the people of Israel and the future that they have through David's offspring. So the bigger stake in this story, rather than just will Ruth find a husband, the bigger stake in this story is the king and the kingdom of promise. You end this story with the genealogy of David, the continuing of the line of Judah, and then you realize that without Ruth, there's no David and there's no Savior. Ruth plays a very important part. We know that it is God's sovereignty that has worked all of these things together, but we come to understand that there is a much greater importance than just these temporal events that happen. So, ultimately, as we study the book of Ruth, and as we go through it and we look at the different details, and we're going to be paying attention to how they work in all of these things that we've been talking about in this overview. Ultimately, in the book of Ruth, we should learn to trust God. Though we have many different problems in life, and sometimes those problems are solved, and sometimes we just live with them. What we need most is not really a solution to our temporary problems in this life. What we need most is salvation. What we need most is life and peace in the kingdom of Jesus Christ. That's ultimately what the book of Ruth is pointing toward. Yes, there are problems that we have, there are wants that we have, there are needs that we have, but ultimately our greatest need is through the birth of the Redeemer. God's salvation comes through the birth of His Son from the line of David, and all who will believe in Him, even Ruth, a Moabite woman, And we'll look at that more closely. But just know this, the Moabites were despised by Israel. Some of their worst and continual and most persistent enemies. Constantly at war with Moab throughout the book of Judges. And Ruth, this Moabite woman, found grace and salvation through David's greater son, Jesus Christ. So all who believe in Him, all who put their faith and trust in Him, just like Ruth did, will be saved and will find eternal rest with God.